It's been so beautiful to hear the voice of the Nay, you know, as we gather each time, and that breath, and just to remember again how a Nay is made, and you know, that one finds a reed that is grown in the water and the earth, and nurtured by the sun and the rain, so that the segments have grown just right to be able to enhance the sound. And it's taken from that reed bed, and then a red hot iron pierces through the center to open it so that that breath can pass through, and then each of the holes, so that each of the notes can be sounded. And that Mevlana begins his whole Masnavi with this remembrance of the reed and the song of the reed and the tale it tells of that yearning for that return. And this whole story, infinite stories interwoven in that process of return to that source of love from which we have grown. And we remember, you know, there is this saying, he, she who knows himself, herself, knows his, her Lord. So it came to heart to share a little bit of a story of that journey this morning. And, you know, our beloved is such an amazing storyteller. You know, each of us carries an amazing story, and they're all interwoven into this amazing tapestry, this story of love. Of birth and return, and birth again and return, and this unfolding of creation. And there's a passage in the Quran that I journeyed back to recently that reminds us that the creation of the heavens and the earth is even greater than the creation of the human being. And yet, we can't comprehend that. So there's this vastness, the heavens and the earth that are visible and the heavens and the earth that are unseen. And we've spoken a bit about our beloved Sulamandere, this inheritor of this tradition of Mevlana that was for us such a presence of love and radiation of spirit. And it also came to heart to mention this morning another beloved who accompanied us in the early days of our journey on this path, another beautiful being named Tassan Shushud, who was, in a sense, a connection with that Shem's spirit for us. And through him, there was a moment when we were actually in Shem's mosque and alone there for some unknown reason. And the caretaker invited us, you know, behind the railing, those of you who've been to Konya, the sarcophagus of Shems is there on a little dais raised, and there's a little railing. And he opened the little railing and took us up beside the sarcophagus, and he pulled back the rug, and there was a trap door he opened and let us down some stairs to sit below where there was a whitewashed tomb and just to sit there in being together. for some moments. And ever since that moment, that presence of Shams has also been so vibrantly with us, and partially through the grace of Hasanbe. So I just wanted to share a few of his sayings this morning to open our moments. Maybe you'll catch some of the fragrance of the ineffable that came through him. He said, "Those who haven't found reality have made ritual into religion. The pleasure of liberation belongs to the person who is the essence of religion, who is not possessed by religion. There are many who talk of God, but who have not known God. Sufism is the knowledge of non-existence. Everything is you, but you are not you. If you're content with what you find, how splendid. If not, that is the splendor of splendors. For hunger is the bread of the prophets." The one I just spoke before. "If you're content with what you find, how splendid. If not, that is the splendor of splendors." He says, "The satiated body strives for the limited, the hungry body for the absolute. And hunger is the bread of the prophets, the dainty morsel of the saints." We're reminded that in that moment when Shams came out and grabbed the bridle of Mevlana as he was passing through the marketplace, the question he asked of him was, who was greater, Muhammad or Bayezid Bastami, this mystic well known in the tradition? And Mevlana said, "Well, of course, Muhammad was greater." And the Shams said, "Well, why then?" "Because Bayezid said, 'Glory be to me, there are 18,000 universes within my arm span.' And Muhammad said, 'My Lord, I have not known you as you ought to be known.'" And Mevlana said, "That's because Bayezid was content and filled with one sip, whereas the Prophet Muhammad's thirst was never quenched." When we say, "La ilaha illallah," there is no God but God, we're not putting something in stone. No, it's the dissolution of the idols, the opening of the space. La ilaha illallah. Nothing but that reality that's so vast. And we can witness in this incredible creation all around us, and also within ourselves, on the farthest horizons and within themselves, until they know the truth. And in this past year, when this body has been limited in its motion, there's been that call to just keep going deeper. And some strange stories have unfolded. Especially somehow being in the midst of Louisville, this beautiful place to which we were brought through much grace, that we've begun to call Loveville, because we feel so much that grace of love that's palpable there. There's a real sense of history, and we shared before with some of you the story that opened of some ancestors that had sort of come into recognition through a couple of medallions that had been gifted to me through my father, that in a journey of discovery, I became aware of this woman, Mary Dyer, who was a grandmother 12 generations back, who was a Quaker, and someone who just immersed so deeply in that inner light and stood so strongly for that freedom of each soul to make that journey of discovery and inner knowing. And another grandfather, Roger Williams, who was one of those with Mary Dyer, her husband, another just handful of people who opened the land of Rhode Island, who found the spring of Providence and attempted to establish a community that allowed freedom of conscience, freedom of spirit, who recognized that no one should be enslaved, whether economically or spiritually, and worked for that. And yet in this journey that this one was drawn through, I discovered grandparents who also held on to that perpetuation of slavery. At the same time that they may have had some nobility of character in their own community, yet they couldn't see. There was something they could not see. And we each hold these elements within ourselves. Those impulses towards freedom and that delight of sharing freedom with every soul, every spirit. And yet those parts of ourselves that may cling to old patterns. Yet the more, we continue in our practice, in our connection with each other, in that process of mirroring, some of those blindnesses can be cleared and we can help each other. There's the beautiful hadith, the time in the life of the Prophet when he said, always support your brother, your sibling, your brother, your sister. And someone asked, but oh Prophet, what if they're doing something that's harmful? And the Prophet said, support them in changing from that. But we have to also bring such a sensitivity to that process, both for ourselves, that patience, that respect for each soul opening in its own journey. You know, it's so often said in the Quran to speak with a beautiful urging. You know, don't speak harshly, because then you trouble someone else's heart and they close down. And more, you know, as we make our own journey, we find all these threads interwoven within ourselves. You know, I came across grandparents who fought on the north side in the Civil War, and those who fought on the southern side. You know, and those who, in the early days, were so strongly involved in the freedom of this country and that movement towards independence and the recognition of the dignity of each human being. And then also recently this strange thread through a line of my mother's father, a grandmother I'd never known about again, 14 generations back, named Eleanor Dennis. And I thought, that's interesting. You know, she was someone whose children had come over. And I started finding the name Eleanor poking up, and there was only one Eleanor that was sort of calling to me from history that I had heard about. And sort of on a lark, I thought, okay, I'm just going to see if there's any connection. So sometimes not being able to do much else with typing even, I Googled. And Eleanor Dennis, Eleanor of Aquitaine. And lo and behold, there's a connection. And another grandmother, you know, 14 generations back from there. And as I was Googling, because Eleanor Dennis had married this man named William Ligon, I came across the Ligon Society. That's interesting. And suddenly it said, well, their headquarters is in Nashville, Tennessee. And I thought, well, that's not so far. Interesting to find out more. And then some things transpired, and some days later our children were coming. We were sort of having a mini family reunion, and I was weaving some pieces together to share with them. And so I Googled again, and the Ligon Society came up, but suddenly the headquarters had changed. Now it was in Louisville, Kentucky. So no, it's so mysterious.
Tell us about Eleanor.
Yes. So I wrote to the Ligon Society and said, you know, I came across this relative, Eleanor Dennis, who married William Ligon, and just curious if you know about them. And, you know, I came across some link that seemed like there was a grandmother, you know, generations back who was Eleanor of Aquitaine, who I have, you know, admired for many years. I'll tell you a little bit about her in a minute. And he wrote back right away and said, oh, yes. And he sent me this whole lineage and said, you know, not only was she a grandmother once, but through 12 lines. And she was someone who lived in the 1100s. Her grandfather was the first troubadour. And she grew up with that, and the beauties of the Islamic traditions coming in through Spain, the beauties of poetry and music. And she married first Louis, King of France. France at that time was a tiny little country, and Aquitaine was much larger. And her parents had died. She was orphaned, and she had to quickly marry someone before someone did away with her somewhere. And she married Louis for some years. And they went on crusade, this strange phenomenon, to the Holy Land. And she fell in love with the Holy Land and didn't want to leave. But eventually she returned and ended up divorcing Louis and marrying Henry II and encouraging in both courts this sense of music and poetry and the song of the beloved. And the whole Grail legend came through and through her and her daughter. And I was reminded of an article that we had come across some years ago that mentioned that everyone in Europe today, really, whose generations go back a little ways, is really descended from Charlemagne. And also from the Prophet Muhammad. And I thought, that's really interesting. I have to look at that again. And, you know, just seeing how this thread had, you know, gone like this. And it ended up being on both sides of the family, like the, you know, the DNA kind of interweaving. And it became apparent that scientists now, partly through this whole DNA research, are confirming this interweaving of all of us. And the way the Prophet Muhammad's bloodline comes in is through the daughter of the Emir of Seville, around that same time as Eleanor of Aquitaine, a little earlier, who ended up taking refuge in the court of a Christian king and became his wife. So on that side, there was a Muslim who became a Christian. That same crusade that Eleanor had accompanied dissolved, and thousands who had come from Europe became Muslims. So we keep having these interweavings, and someone recently has carried this research further and discovered that even just going back about 1,000 years, within the European community and those descended, you know, maybe 20% of the ancestry has died out, but of the 80% left, there's all this intertwining of common ancestry. And if we go back 3,400 years, there are fewer and fewer, you know, in this tree that coalesce. Instead of being, you know, separate trees from this continent, that continent, the other, it all comes together in this amazing web. And they discovered that even in the remote island of Tasmania, there's no one that has pure Tasmanian blood. Because there's always been this impetus in the human being to journey, to discover, to know, to recognize, to share. And I thought, well, I wonder if we go back 3,400 years, you know, who were the prophets at that time? You know, that spiritual lineage that we share in our DNA. And we have, at that time, Confucius, 77 generations back. And for a while they were saying, you know, there's just 1 million or so descendants of Confucius alive today. But they weren't including the women. Or those of minority communities within that bloodline, like those who had become Muslim. So when they added all that together, it was several million. You know, it just keeps... And so it's so beautiful to... I mean, sometimes, you know, in different communities, it may focus more on the male lineage, or in some, like the Native American, there's more awareness of the matrilineal. But it's woven together, you know, so beautifully. And of the Abrahamic prophets in that time period of 3,400 years ago, when, you know, this shared ancestry becomes so close, it was the time of Moses. And we think of Moses so primarily, but it was three siblings. It was Moses and Aaron and Miriam who stood together in that truth. And Miriam, I was discovering just a little bit more about her recently. You know, we have a little bit of her story in the Christian tradition and the Muslim tradition of, you know, how it was she who helped when Moses was set into the water. And, you know, her mother had made this little basket and set Moses into the stream and into the Nile. And in some versions, in the Christian version, it's spoken of as the daughter of Pharaoh who finds him. And in the Islamic tradition, it's the wife of Pharaoh who stands in that truth and recognizes the beauty of this child that she takes into her heart. And it's Miriam, his sister, who says, "Oh, I know someone who can nurse him," and runs to bring her mother. But what I didn't know is that it was Miriam who, as a child, when she was like 5 or 6, who spoke to her parents and said, "There's a child coming who will be the one to liberate our people." And when Pharaoh's decree went out to kill the male children, the tradition in the Jewish tradition is that the father of Aaron and Miriam, they were older than Moses, then divorced his wife because he didn't want this to happen. He didn't want a child to be born and then killed. And so because he was a leader in the community, everybody else divorced their wives. And Miriam, this child, went to her father and she said, "How can you do this? Your decree is worse than Pharaoh's. He was only going to prevent the life of the male children. You're preventing the life of both, male and female." And he recognized the truth of what she was conveying as a child. And he remarried their mother, and Moses was conceived. And then by the stream, this coming together happens. And we're reminded that, you know, it's mentioned that all life comes from water. And another beauty of the remembrance of Miriam is that as they were journeying through the wilderness, there was a rolling rock that accompanied them that was a well of water that was called Miriam's well. It was through her grace that this water was gifted. And, you know, we have that sense of water, you know, like the song of the reed, that tale of the water coming through the air, the earth, all the elements interweaving to support life. And there's so many mysteries of this interweaving, you know, of all our spirits, all our lineages. They say that if you go back 5,400 years, you come to an unknown ancestor that's like that pivotal point, you know. We created you all from a single soul. And that happens over and over again. And we're like that point of an hourglass, you know, all of this ancestry coming to us and then passing again to the generations upon generations, inshallah, of that amazing creation. And this DNA, I've been really puzzling about it lately. It's just so mysterious, and how there are 23, you know, proteins that are carried and blended from each side, from the male and the female, to create each of us. And some scientists have looked back at, you know, the origins even of the bacteria and this intermediary stage of creation, as well as that which has given rise to mammals and, you know, all of the different animals and to us. And all of them have this signature of those 23 proteins. And then I thought, I wonder if you look at the Abjad, the meaning of the number 23, what the word is. Because in Arabic, there is this sense of meaning and number being interwoven. So I Googled again. And lo and behold, it comes to nutfa. That infinitesimal drop of fluid through which we're created. And we're reminded that the Quran, this source of sustenance for us, was revealed over 23 years. So many mysteries. So many beautiful stories. And we each, you know, carry a special signature, a gift as a part of this creation. And he, she, who knows him, herself, knows his, her Lord. And as Muhammad said, "My Lord, I have not known you as you ought to be known." As long as we have this gift of life, that journey just keeps opening, that intimacy with the Beloved. And we're reminded of a passage in the Quran where the Prophet says, "No reward do I ask of you for this, but that you love one another. Love your fellows, love those who are near, al-qurba." So we might comprehend that in the sense of nearness, those who are physically with us, near to us, or those who are near through kinship, and also those who are near. The prophets, the saints, who call us into that nearness, and the angels, who it said are continually circling the throne, singing praises. And yet it said that throne extends over the heavens and the earth. This earth, this heavens, this earth, this heavens. And it said the angels are near us in this world and the next. There's a beautiful passage from the Quran. I'll just share if I can find it here. Maybe this one first. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Those who bear within themselves the knowledge of the throne of Almightiness and those near it sing glory and praises to their sustainer. Have faith in him, her, and ask forgiveness for those who have faith. O our sustainer, you embrace all things within your compassion and knowledge. Forgive then those who turn in repentance and follow your path, and preserve them from suffering through the fire. And O our sustainer, bring them into the gardens of eternity, which you have promised to them and to the righteous among their forebears, their spouses, and their descendants. For you are almighty, truly wise. Preserve them from harmful deeds. And any whom you preserve from harmful deeds, on that day truly you will have graced with your mercy. And that will be the ultimate success. Amin. Ain Sin Kaf. Thus has God the Almighty, the Wise, revealed to you the truth and unto those who preceded you. His, hers, is all that is in the heavens and all that is on earth. And most exalted, magnificent is he, she. The uppermost heavens are well nigh rent asunder in awe. And the angels extol their sustainer's limitless glory and praise and ask forgiveness for all who are on earth. Oh, truly, God alone is truly forgiving, a bestower of grace. And what a beautiful grace that forgiveness that washes us, that clears us of all those tightnesses and struggles. Again and again, bringing us back into that nearness, returning us to our source, to that infinite love and compassion that pours through every human being through that nearness. It is said, God is the one who inherits. And that can be moment by moment. There's a little passage from Hassan Bey. He says, the rays of the sun come in through many windows, yet it is the same sun. There's value in knowing individuals one by one, and to see them all within a single divine light, within the Noor, is something else. All of this, all of these manifestations were due to the necessity of his, her divine names and attributes. Diversity we see in the universe has no beginning or end. If we look at the universe as greater than us and less than us, who is Allah who looks through every eye, who hears through every ear, who thinks within every mind, who feels affectionate in every affection, who gets knocked down and stands up in everyone who gets knocked down and stands up. He, she is closer to us than our closeness to ourselves. What does it mean that he, she's closer than your own closeness to yourself? We see that whom we call Allah, who weeps together with one who weeps, who laughs together with one who laughs, who grieves together with one who grieves, is closer to us than our closeness to ourselves. What is that divine light? What is this diversity between birth and death? This existence, or what seems to exist, and majesty that cannot be grasped by the mind? What are those great ones, or sacred ones, that get immersed within that divine light that mind or intellect cannot understand? What is our heart, our depth, our secret, our truth that was not born nor will not die? And then that majesty which never gives up running after them. Who is our sustainer? Who, in Mevlana Rumi's words, showed the non-existent as existent and magnificent, who hid the wind and showed the dust, whom we call the great creator, who addresses, I am omnipresent, present everywhere, present with you in every moment, and who breaks the seal in the heart of the darling in the cave of Mount Hira, through the breath of that one, we are alive. And the aim, the target of the path of investigation and liberation is to find this. Returning to that source of love, that infinite mystery, that palpable knowing, that ineffable light within the heart, pouring through all these windows, so as we continue this journey, maybe carry with us this remembrance. Of that light unfolding and witnessing that light within, unveiling mystery upon mystery, that splendor of splendors. Present, pouring through the heart. And we share in this prayer of the Prophet Muhammad, peace and blessings upon him. O God, grant me light in my heart, washing clear that I may know you more and more fully, now and always. Grant me light in my grave, in that secret of secrets, where we are drawn close. Grant me light in front of me and in all that moves forward from and through me. Grant me light behind me. May light open through all my ancestry, rectifying and restoring all that came before. Grant me light to my right, light to my left, light above me and light below me. As Mevlana says, I asked for one kiss and you gave me six. All the directions may light pour through. Grant me light in my ears, through all hearing, touching this heart. Grant me light in my eyes, through all seeing, of the seen and the unseen. Grant me light on my skin, this organ of continual exchange. Light in my hair, light in my flesh, light in my blood, light in my bones, in the whole structure and fabric of my being. O God, increase my light everywhere. O God, grant me light within my heart. Light on my tongue. Light in my eyes. Light in my ears. Light to my right. Light to my left. Light above me. Light below me. Light in front of me. Light behind me. And light within myself. Increase my light. And we close with a short passage from the Quran. The surah of the glorious morning light that opens in support when we have felt as orphans cut off or wandering or unsheltered. The voice of the divine has come to us saying, when? Don't you remember when there was a moment you felt as an orphan and I sheltered you? You were wandering and I guided you. You were in need and I satisfied your need. So do not be harsh with orphans, with those who may be in a place of separation, nor turn away someone who asks something of you, but continually declare the blessings of your sustainer. Bismillah Rahman Rahim. Wadhuha Wallayli Hitha Sacha Mawaduka Rabbuka Wa Makala وَلَلْآخِرَةُ خَيْرٌ لَكَ مِنَ الْأُولَى وَلَسَوْفَ يُعْطِيكَ رَبُّكَ فَتَرْضَى أَلَمْ يَجِدْكَ يَتِيمًا فَآوَى وَوَجَدَكَ ضَالًّا فَهَدَى وَوَجَدَكَ عَائِلًا فَأَغْنَى فَأَمَّا الْيَتِيمَ فَلَا تَقْهَرْ وَأَمَّا السَّائِلَ فَلَا تَنْهَرْ وَأَمَّا بِنِعْمَةِ رَبِّكَ فَهَدِيَ. Subhanallah, Ya Rabbil Alameen. Amen. Glory to this new morning. And to these beauties. We'll take a pause, a break for some minutes, and return in 15 minutes, inshallah. Ivallah.